Welcome to Work Matters. I'm your host, Thomas Bertels. My guest today is Jesse Jacoby, and we're talking about how to get layoffs right. In our conversation, we look at the role senior leaders and middle managers play, the hidden costs of getting it wrong, the importance of communications, and of course, the impact of AI. Jesse is the founder of Emergent and a trusted advisor to Fortune 500 and mid-market companies navigating high-stakes transformations. His work spans complex initiatives such as corporate restructurings, organizational redesigns, mergers and acquisitions, technology implementations, process reengineering, and enterprise-wide cost reductions. Layoffs are on the rise, and I hope you find this conversation useful. As always, please don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. Jesse Jacoby, welcome to the Work Matters podcast.
Thanks, Thomas. Appreciate you having me. Looking forward to our discussion.
So really excited to talk to you because the topic of layoffs has been in the news over the last couple of months. A couple of large companies laid off significant amounts of workers. And you have written quite a bit about that topic and how to do smarter layoffs if layoffs are appropriate. For readers that are not familiar with your work, I highly encourage them to check out your newsletter. We're going to put a link to that into the show notes. Tell us a little bit about your work, what you're involved in these days.
I help Fortune 500 companies and large middle market companies as well navigate transformational change, and particularly around organizational restructuring and cost reduction, which I know we're going to talk about. Inevitably, cost reduction typically has headcount impact, layoff impact, and we've been in the trenches for many years. And what we've learned working with companies is that layoffs aren't just financial events, they're cultural inflection points that either strengthen or severely damage the organization's long-term health.
One thing that struck me about your work is that you talk about the hidden costs of layoffs. So in your view, what are some of those hidden costs?
Organizations by nature focus on results, usually quarterly, sometimes annually, meeting the numbers, but they often fail to account for the hidden costs, such as increase in hiring and retraining, which I think is well documented, but also productivity hits, morale hits, innovation reduction, reputational damage. There are a number of, I'll call them categories of hidden costs, and often these surprise the organization, and they're not typically accounted for very well.
Well, one thing I see is that most leaders try to avoid layoffs because, to your point, there's significant hidden costs. So what are some things that people can do before resorting to a large-scale layoff as demand slows down, as the results are maybe not what they're looking for? What are some maybe less dramatic steps people can take?
Yeah, if you want to avoid the hit to morale and engagement, the productivity loss, the reputational damage, hits to innovation, the rehiring, retraining. There are some things you can do as a company, a large enterprise, that are not layoffs, but could potentially yield you some of the results that you're after. And these include looking into job sharing programs, reducing office hours, i.e. furloughs, voluntary separation packages, temporary leave is another creative option, retraining initiatives, and internal redeployment, just moving folks around and getting some savings through that method.
I guess one other way people could do it is just to leverage attrition as the business or the economy slows down to not refill jobs. Is that a viable strategy?
I should have mentioned that one. That's actually a really good strategy that's pre-layoff or an alternative to layoff, which is to let the natural attrition play out, whether it's 20, 30% annually, whatever is typical for that organization, just freeze the hiring and let the folks attrit. And sometimes that can get you where you need to go in terms of cost savings.
Okay, but let's say we're in a situation where we haven't done that. We're not proactive. So now we got to make the numbers. We got to lay off people. What are some ways that leaders can mitigate the negative consequences?
Yeah, well, there's a role for leaders to play, certainly if they're going to go down the path of layoffs. There's also a role for middle managers to play as well. And I know we'll probably dig into that one, but to your point around the senior leaders, it's important for them to be aware of this strategic myopia, let's call it, which is a focus purely on the numbers And whether that's quarterly again, maybe even for the year, research shows that many transformation initiatives fail, the layoffs specifically, without proper focus on the people. As leaders, they need to be aware that there's a communication strategy, a narrative around what they're doing. They need to own that narrative and be able to articulate it. And town halls and broadcast communications aren't enough when it comes to this type of activity. Leaders need to show up personally, skip level meetings, ask me anything, direct engagement with their people, which is difficult because inevitably they're in a sticky situation where they're having to answer very provocative and pointed questions. But that transparency, that authenticity is very important. And obviously, coming back to the narrative, being on the same page as a leadership team, we can't have multiple narratives. So everyone needs to be dialed in on what we're doing, why we're doing it, what happens if we don't do it, and what's next. Those are a few things that leaders really need to focus on right out of the gate if they're going to go down the layoff path.
What about the middle managers? Because those, at the end of the day, take the brunt of this because the people are gone, the work's still there. What are some strategies that might help middle managers avoid suffering the negative consequences?
Yeah, I mean, they're really the linchpin. They deliver the news and they support the survivors, the folks who aren't laid off but are left behind to maintain the performance and the organization. And middle managers are critical, to your point. They're facing an impossible burden in some ways. They have to deliver bad news because they're typically having to communicate directly to their direct reports, the impacts. They're also having to maintain team morale during this. They're having to absorb the additional workload among the remaining team members, like figure out where the work goes. Rarely does the work just disappear. There's a trifecta right there that falls on the shoulders of the middle managers. And most organizations have zero training for this type of thing for their middle managers. They do try to provide them support and guidance, but often it's haphazard, it's rushed. And so the middle managers are ill-prepared for this type of work. We're there to help as consultants, but it's often a gap and it's not always accounted for properly. Ideally, we'd love to see the middle managers, enough time spent with them, preparing them, giving them some coaching and training on how to navigate the situation, talking to their people and how to communicate with empathy to the impacted employees, how to engage the remaining team members to keep the morale high. All of this is part of the critical role of that middle management layer. And of course, it ties back to the senior leaders who need to allow the time and space for this preparation to happen with the middle managers.
Yeah, that I think brings up an interesting point because we talked about like the negative longer term ramifications of this. Like maybe initially you get like a little bump in the stock price, but then over time, productivity goes down, engagement drops. I think there are plenty of studies that show that companies 6-9 months further down the road are in worse shape than they were prior to the layoffs. So it seems that there's a really good rationale for enabling middle managers to navigate this as good as possible to mitigate these consequences. I'm just wondering why there's so little investment. Maybe your clients are the notable exception, but in general, I see there's really very little that is being done to set those folks in the middle up for success. Would you agree? What have you seen with other companies that maybe shows a different path?
The senior leadership teams rarely are doing this ham-handed on purpose. Typically, it's a symptom of wanting to move quickly, harvesting the cost savings, hitting the numbers, and a realization and acknowledgement that we're going to break some stuff in the process and we can fix it later. However, you know, that breaking things and fixing it later is often underestimated. The damage that can be done, again, to reputation, to culture, to performance, morale, etc., is often underestimated. So the move fast, break things, we can fix it later overrides the more thoughtful slow down. Let's go slow to go fast later. Bake in some time to really prep our middle managers so that we can do this effectively and retain as much of this morale and performance and not take so much of a hit. And so what have we seen? Smart companies who get that will bake that into their planning and add the additional weeks of cycle time and allow us to work with them to thoughtfully craft a middle management engagement strategy and playbook for those middle managers. Equip them, coach them, give them the time and space to get ready. The smart companies will do that. Again, others will do a short shrift version of that. And some just want to move quickly and break stuff and fix it later and learn a hard lesson.
I mean, if you had your wish, so you have a client that says, Jesse, help us. What would you put into that middle manager's toolkit? What are maybe the 1, 2, 3 things that you would want to make sure that they really master or are capable of executing?
Yeah, I think the training on difficult conversations is an obvious one. How to deliver the layoff news so that's authentic, as each manager is or should be. The work transition planning process and guidance. How to manage and inspire and engage the survivors, the team that's left behind and has to pick up the work, how to show up and answer questions and be available in an honest way. But I will come back to that workload redesign or transitioning of the work, because often the work doesn't go away at the same proportionality as the people. Sometimes they're one-to-one. You eliminate a role and all the related work with that role goes away. But oftentimes, it's not a one-to-one. And so what you're left with is, I'll call it orphaned work or pieces of a process. And so that ability to plan work transition, let's call it, to avoid that orphaned or abandoned work once the people go away, that needs to be thoughtfully planned and executed. And that involves the middle managers. They know the work that their team members were doing. And when the team members go away, there needs to be a very thoughtful path of what is the work, how much effort does it represent, and where's it going? Maybe it's getting dispersed among 2 or 3 other people instead of just transitioning to one other person. Maybe it's being automated, but it's going somewhere. So that is a really critical component. And so when we want to spend time with the managers and help organizations prep for layoff and what comes in the wake of that, this is a big piece of it.
Yeah, one thing I see, which I find is really interesting, is that as the headcount decision is being made, we're going to do with 20% less people. I've seen an interesting phenomenon that actually the most capable people in your organization end up with the crappiest task. And the reason is because you need somebody to pick it up fast. And so those are just the first people you go to, your go-to people. And I find that's over time really makes a bad situation even worse, because those people say, right, I don't feel that this is really playing to my strengths, and they start looking for other opportunities. So now you're losing the A players, and pretty soon you're losing the B players. Do you see that too in your work, or are there other patterns that you observe when people are not well prepared to deal with that?
Yeah, we said the C word, capable, which sparks me to think about capability. And this work of layoffs should not be done without a proper assessment upfront around the capabilities of the organization and looking at the operating model and all the pieces of the operating model to figure out what does that look like in the future state? After we do the layoffs, what is the target operating model? And let's be thoughtful about not only where we're cutting, but where we're investing, right? If we're going to shift work and change how we do things as an enterprise, what does that mean? Are we automating more? Are we outsourcing? Are we lopping off parts of the business? Are we standing up brand new capabilities writ large? So that starts to address some of where does the work go and how do we prevent just shoveling it onto our most capable, competent, high-performing individuals, which does happen, but not when you thoughtfully plan for the target operating model in advance. Because when you do that, that means structurally process, information flows, decisions, a lot of that stuff's going to change post-layoff. And with those changes, you can move work very thoughtfully to align with the new target operating model and not overload those very important high-performing individuals.
I think it's also a challenge for these middle managers to be seen as credible leaders, because if those edicts are being passed down and you have literally no time to figure out, right, how we're going to cope with that, I think from a team perspective, that probably comes across as weak, or at the very least, not as very supportive, because the work's just being put on their shoulders and the manager goes off and moves on to the next task, right? Is that the concern that you have in your work with people?
We're referring to middle managers in big organizations. This is hundreds or thousands of people, obviously, and they're not a monolith. as a management layer, each one is unique and each one has multiple teams, or at least one team, and each team is its own subculture and microclimate of unique work styles. How the layoff strategy gets executed is inevitably fragmented and made unique by the mere dint that these managers are individuals and have these unique cultures and microclimates within their teams. It's important for the leaders and us as consultants who are helping the company stay close to this process. So in real time, in a very agile way, course correct, guide and coach. This isn't set it in motion and paint by number and watch it play out in some perfect scenario. It never happens this way, and any good general will tell you that the well-laid plans never survive the battlefield. It's much the same here. So it's very important to stay close to this process as it plays out, whether that's days or weeks. But that prepping of the managers and the execution of the communications and the process of the actual layoffs themselves, that is a really critical, sensitive time that everybody needs to have their finger on the pulse and be ready to act, adapt, adjust accordingly.
So you talked about communication earlier on, as well as just now. What are some sort of do's and don'ts when it comes to communicating layoffs and what the repercussions are?
It can't be an afterthought, right? It's the backbone of the restructuring in a lot of ways. Obviously, there's leader competence and readiness of the middle managers, but the communications is at the core of everything. And so alignment of the leaders on the messaging first. That's thing one, right out of the gate, and having a strong narrative. So just crafting that, then getting alignment, like I said, making sure everybody's on the same page. That really is important to prevent conflicting stories, because that's the last thing that you want. And it'll happen inevitably as people version. It's telephone, right? So people are going to version the narrative anyway. Keep it as tight and aligned right out of the gate and prepare the managers before the rest of the organization hears the news. So that's also an important key piece of the communications. Legal and HR compliance is critical as part of the communications planning. The WARN Act dictates how layoffs need to be communicated with how much lead time and specific protocols. So it's important to follow that. If there are unionized pieces of the workforce, very important consideration, again, from a legal HR compliance perspective when it comes to comms. And one thing that we tell our clients is that no longer, and it's been this way for a while, but no longer is there such a thing as internal versus external communications. So when you are communicating what you're saying, just assume it's going to be visible to the world. And so all the more reason to be prepared and handle carefully the planning, because information leaks, it's just inevitable. And then when it's time to announce the layoffs, never on a Friday. We tell clients that all the time, and never by email or asynchronous communications. It needs to be live. It needs to be personal. It needs to be face-to-face. And this counts as face-to-face too. Not ideal, but practically speaking, this day and age, sometimes this is how it has to be with remote workers. But yeah, you need to allow people time to process and give them the information in a real, authentic human way. So face-to-face, followed by written summary. So it's important to sort of codify what's being communicated in a formal written way. And message consistency, again, all levels adapted for each audience, I think is key.
The last 2 years, everybody has been talking about AI, and some more AI, right? And clearly, some companies are taking notice and laying off people, whether that is in anticipation of AI productivity gains or because they achieved AI productivity gains, so they don't need as many people. I think the jury is still out on some of those. Is AI going to continue to be a factor in large-scale layoffs? Do you see that abating at some point in time? Do you think it's just a momentary phenomena where people just seize the opportunity to cut the fat that they wanted to cut for a long time? What's your perspective?
Yeah, I think it might be closer to what you just said there last, which at least this past year or so, it's important to not conflate and to tease apart a few things. There's AI-driven transformation. There's market-driven cost reduction forces at play. And there's just a need for strategic realignment at a lot of companies. And it happens inevitably as companies grow. And so I think a lot of this has been conflated over the past year or so, and whether it's the companies using AI as a ruse or the press just running amok with the AI narrative, a lot of this is seemingly or apparently AI-driven downsizing, when in reality, these companies became bloated and overhired during COVID. They needed to do realignment anyway. There's lots of other market forces at play that are necessitating them to restructure and lay off. And so AI is being used as an excuse in a lot of cases. Now, having said that, getting back to your question, what role does AI play going forward? Yeah, it's not just changing how jobs are created or destroyed. It's really changing workforce planning as a whole. And it has a role to play in this work. It can help with the analysis of where do we need to build capabilities. The AI as a tool can really find hidden opportunities in the organization, looking at disparate data and figuring out we have a capability gap here that we could close with some modest investment. Or these are the real parts of the organization that decision making is stagnant, or we've got too many layers, or there's just the processes need to be overhauled. AI can help with all of that analysis as a tool to enable a lot of this restructuring work and layoff planning. AI as a tool is really powerful. As a consultant using it to help clients, as clients using it themselves to analyze their enterprise. So that's one lens through which we can look at the AI. I'll call that an opportunity. And then when it comes to AI disrupting or displacing people, I have a perspective that AI is a productivity enhancer. It is a tool. Now, can it take away some of the work that employees do? Absolutely. In a lot of cases, it'll take away the lower level work, the mundane work, the repetitive work, so that employees can focus on higher value activities, which they want to do anyway, which would lead to higher morale and better performance and so forth and so on. So we are looking at AI as a partner. So human and machine partnership, how does that work? How do we make sure that every role in the organization knows how to leverage AI within the boundaries and the guidelines and the privacy restrictions, right? So within the bounds of the enterprise, everybody can use AI to make their role more productive. We as consultants help clients figure that out. So we're not replacing people per se, but figuring out where there's efficiencies, productivity gains, where AI can be leveraged to really help energize a role, a team, a function, a capability. It's not so much about displacing people. That'll happen as a byproduct with restructuring the enterprise, but AI directly replacing people is not something we advocate, and it's not something I really see as a direct threat.
All right, there's hope for the humans in the enterprise. Layoffs are difficult. It's not something most people like to do, with some notable exceptions. But have you seen any company do it really well?
Yeah, I can think of a particular industrials client of ours. They really took the time to invest in the middle manager preparation. Again, that's huge. Planning and strategizing, restructuring that involves layoffs, taking the time to get that right. And they did that. They took our advice and did the communications at the beginning of the week. And in doing them, as difficult as it is, HR managers and leaders showing up in person or at least live, face-to-face to communicate the difficult decisions to the people impacted and made themselves available. That was another thing they did really well is in the wake of that, open door policies, inviting in impacted and remaining team members, the survivors, to have conversations. You can ask me anything. My door's open. My door will be open for the next several weeks. Come in. You don't need to schedule it. I'm here. I'm available. I will listen. And they did those three things really well. And because of that, after all of this transpired, they were able to maintain a relatively high net promoter score among employees and productivity dip was minimized, etc.
I'm also wondering where people invest time and energy. So there's one scenario that says, we're just going to decide to cut headcount by 20% across the board. And we're going to dump it on the middle manager. Let's call that case A. I guess case B would be to say, we're going to do the same thing, but we're going to train middle managers to deal with that a little bit better. So a life preserver, so to speak. In addition to that, we actually develop a robust plan. We start thinking about, like, after the layoffs, what kind of changes will we make to enable the organization to function going forward? And maybe the extreme scenario is we do both. We have a really robust plan cooked up at the senior level, and we enable middle managers to deal with the unexpected or the unforeseen. I'd be curious if you had to put odds of success on each one of those scenarios, how you would see that.
The dumping onto managers, not surprisingly, is a very low probability. We'll put that in the maybe 0 to 10% category. I think your second example was training them and preparing them, and you certainly increased the odds, maybe up to 50%. And then ideally, I think your last suggestion, if we spend the time to design the future state operating model, and we are also building some capabilities or bolstering existing capabilities while we are doing the restructuring and layoffs, then when it comes to parking work in new places and moving responsibilities around and decision rights, et cetera, we have more opportunities where to park that stuff. Where does it belong and where is it appropriate? Not just in our existing archaic operating model, but because we've taken the time to design a future state operating model, we have new capabilities. We have new functions. We have new teams doing things in different ways. Now, when it comes to redistributing the work, redistributing the decision rights, figuring out how information flows, we have a lot more opportunities with this new operating model than trying to just cram it into an archaic structure that we had before. And that one is a high probability of success, not surprisingly.
Yeah. Yeah, and sorry for leading the witness, right? But I find it really fascinating because I see companies oftentimes have 6 months where they lay out the plans, but this opportunity to redesign the work gets squandered because everybody is so busy moving the boxes on the org chart. You don't start with a clean sheet. It's not all the people are gone and now we just slot new people into these roles. If we cut 20%, we still have 80% of the existing workforce, and somehow we got to make this organization work with the people that we have. And I find that leaders get stuck in moving the boxes on the org chart. Is that something you see too?
100%. It's easy to fixate on the org chart. That's an avoidance strategy of senior leaders to not deal with the underlying more difficult situations, which could be cultural, could be poor senior leaders, or any number of things that aren't fixed by shuffling boxes on an org chart. So yeah, there is typically an over fixation on the org chart. But let's be honest, the org chart is the structural piece of the operating model. There is way more to an operating model than just the structure, right? There's the strategy. There are the processes that connect everything. There's information flows. There's decision rights. There's the culture. And the culture eats strategy, you know, to quote an old saying. Oftentimes, there is a lot of cultural baggage that underlies some of the problems that they're trying to fix through an org chart. The short answer to your question is there is often a lot of overfixation on org charts as the primary lever for fixing the organization, when in reality, we need to be looking at all of the facets of the operating model, because there are usually opportunities / problems to be addressed, and the org chart is but one of those.
Another phenomenon with layoffs that I find fascinating is that senior leaders oftentimes think that this is a well-kept secret. Nobody knows. In my experience, that's rarely the case. Employees know that something is up. They just don't know when the shoe is going to drop. Am I wrong? What do you see? Is this something that actually companies can keep under wraps until the big announcement comes?
Sometimes. It depends how it's handled. Employees are smart. They're savvy. Many of them are emotionally intelligent and can read the tea leaves. And if this process, this strategy and planning process takes too long and involves too many people, there will be leaks. And so you can just anticipate and plan for leaks. And again, I mentioned this artificial internal versus external communications. This is something to be very mindful of during the planning and execution of a layoff. Assume everybody in the world is going to know about what you're doing. And so keeping the planning process tight is part of addressing that. It's one of the watchouts, right? Typically, there's some sense in the air. The people as a whole often know that something's afoot. They might not know the magnitude and specifically which functions and teams are going to be impacted. But, you know, there's been some precursor, some bellwether events that typically precede this. People aren't dumb. And so they can anticipate something coming, just not knowing the size and shape and exact timing and impact on them specifically. But yeah, there's typically something in the air.
Listen, Jesse, really appreciate you sharing your expertise with us. If people want to know more about what you do, how you could help their organization post layoff, where should they go? How can they learn more about your work?
Emergentconsultants.com is our company site. And you're more than welcome to find me and connect with me on LinkedIn as well. Jesse Jacoby.
Excellent. So we'll put that into the show notes to make it easy for people to reach out to you. But really appreciate you sharing your experience. You have a really interesting offering in a time like this. I'm sure there's a demand coming from this, as unfortunate as that is. But I 100% agree that we better equip mid-level managers with the tools to get through this time as good as possible, because the downstream costs are really significant. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Thomas. It's been a pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this discussion. If you did, be sure to subscribe, like, share, or comment. Until next time, let's make work matter.